heck is that you got with you there, Tomás?
Good evening, Roman. You mean this old thing?
Who let you in with that? I attempted to call security.
Well, you see, I saw this thing on the end of the programme, Surprise Extra, and I thought I'd fish out the old trumpet and see what happened, you know? I could be called into play yet, you never know. Let me tell you.
I don't know about that, Tomás. It's looking a bit rusty around. Oh, do trumpets rust, or what the heck is that?
Yes, they fade away gracefully.
They fade away gracefully.
Into a very slow, low glissando.
Well, I'm going to stick my neck out, Tomás, and say, after that first half there with the Haydn trumpet and the Prokofiev classical symphony, I'm going to say, we've listened to two 18th century pieces of music. But I better explain before... Oh, there's someone over there obviously saying I don't know what I'm talking about. Let me explain. Obviously, Haydn is 18th century, and Prokofiev's classical symphony is a great ode to the classical era, and almost in homage to Haydn and Mozart. Starting with the trumpet concerto, I think it's lovely. I think it's a fantastic piece, and I think it's fantastic that we're able to get, you know. Really, I'd be making the point, Tomás, but with regard to the trumpet, they don't get a chance to shine very often. But when they're called, I'm talking about not solo so much now as orchestral playing, but when they get the chance to shine, they must be able to step up to the mark. Think, for instance, of the opening of Mahler's Fifth Symphony. Now, they have no chance to... They've done all their warming up off stage because the conductor is barely even conducting. He looks up, he nods at the principal trumpet, and off that guy goes. He might as well be naked. He's out there on his own. There hasn't been a minute or two of orchestral playing just to ease him into it. He's out there. He's got to be able to do it. He's got to step up. It's a similar thing, not quite as challenging maybe in the Rossini William Tell overture, where you've got all the lovely cello to start, and then it gradually, it just seems to fade away, fade away, fade away, fade away, and then do-do-do-do-do-do, and off it goes like that, and he's called upon. But apart from those times, they don't get a chance to shine very much. So I'm delighted to see that here tonight, some, again, clever programming, thoughtful, insightful programming, has shown the Haydn concerto to start. And then I think the Prokofiev doesn't obviously have featured trumpet in a solo role, although our soloist tonight is directing. We don't have a conductor here tonight. Prokofiev, what can I say about that? Well, I've always said, Tomás, that if somebody who just doesn't get classical music were to hold a metaphorical gun to my head and say, Raymond, now come on, what's all the fuss about? What's all the hullabaloo about? Name me one piece of classical music that's going to convert me. I would have no hesitation saying Prokofiev Classical Symphony. I love it because it grabs you instantly. It's hard not to, as I say, even tap your foot. And not only that, I think not only is it aurally, you know, very accessible for a newcomer, but visually, if there was somebody here tonight, I mean, I should have thought about this. I should have thought here tonight, I'm kicking myself, that I should have brought along someone who just is not a believer and just sat them into the audience and then see what they think afterwards. Because visually, it's a great, almost a lesson, almost a tutorial in how orchestral playing is, I won't say composed, but constructed, you might say. There's a lot of individual playing. There's a lot of, you know, featuring on the different instruments and then it all coming together. And another thing they could learn from that here tonight is that, you know, the classic complaint about, what's this a conductor does? Doesn't he just wave his arms? Again, you could see visually and aurally tonight the role, and in this case a director, just of what happens when they're pulling together a symphony. Now, obviously, this evening, Håkan Hardenberger is soloist and director of the orchestra, but I think it's still a very good lesson for somebody coming along to see how the whole thing comes together, and as I say, a lovely, accessible piece of music.
Yeah, I suppose that's where I have my trouble. It's the same kind of wellspring of I don't know, is it this definite desire not to go with the herd that many, you know, that we have, which is this kind of horrible, you know, resistance to ABBA, you know, that I'm just going, and you know, I was there going, oh, I'm sure they're good. And years later, I was able to accept that they were profoundly technically competent individuals producing very fine music. But same way when I see Prokofiev's Symphony No. 1, and it's, you know, what I think is, here's, you know, everything that he has distilled from his educational process about the classical form before Beethoven, sort of the mathematical complexity of the symphony in its most elegant and refined mathematical form, and out it comes. There's a dab of Haydn here, a soupçon of Mozart there, a little twist of something of his own peppered into it. And of course, it's a great introduction to anyone for, you know, the classical form, particularly the symphony, because it's you know, it lifts from so many parts. But on the other hand, it's rather bland, and it saunters along in a very inoffensive manner. And to me, a little bit soulless. You know, the best of Prokofiev obviously is still to come. And I just felt, you know, even despite the presence of the trumpet, which always profoundly interests me, because, of course, as a callow youth, I was very, very interested in being a trumpet player, and found out very, very quickly, well, actually very slowly, years it took me to really be convinced that I was so appalling that my gift to humanity would be to take up that other profoundly stunning instrument, the air trumpet.
Oh, the air trumpet.
The air trumpet, a far more productive use of my time than to handle brass and ivory, believe me.
I've heard of the air guitar. In fact, I was quite competent on the air guitar myself, but I've never heard of the air trumpet. Please explain.
Well, the air trumpet is for very, very sad people who listen to Prokofiev's Symphony No. 1 and think, I could do that bit there. I know I could do that bit there. And my problem was I was lured in. I was lured in by the classical forms before Beethoven. I was, in fact, I suppose, really lured in by the trumpet before the 20th century. Because before the 20th century, trumpet playing is really a mathematical engagement, and for me, my trumpet was a technical instrument. It was a scientific instrument, and I felt it was a real product of the scientific enlightenment. You know, it was the astrolabe for the musical sphere, and so I was pointing my trumpet out. So the trumpet was actually pulling down notes, I felt, into its mouth rather than spitting them out, and I think that's mostly what my music teacher thought as well. And he felt that if I could stop pointing it at the stars looking for music and actually blow something out of the front of it, maybe we'd all be a lot better off. So then listening to those forms, such as Haydn, obviously, here, and, you know, the absolutely gorgeous concerto for trumpet, that's the kind of thing, you know, in my mind I aspired to. And so as an idiot child, I held my trumpet and followed along to the record, thinking about playing each of these things, failing miserably to do so. But the real revelation and the real surprise for me was when I heard Miles Davis. And then I realized that, in fact, it didn't have to be an instrument of mathematics. It could be an instrument of emotion. And that was when I knew I had to give up.
Ladies and gentlemen, program cards for this evening's performance are available at all entries into the main auditorium.
Well, I got to take you back there, though. I got to pick you up. I mean, you've almost suggested that the Prokofiev was a little bit trite. Now, I should explain. I was very, very privileged there a few years ago. My wife, Fanula, was leading the World Orchestra for Peace, and conducted by Valery Gergiev. And I was lucky enough to go along to the rehearsals as well as the concert. So I was able to listen to him talking to the orchestra, the players. And I remember him saying, "Play it like a Haydn symphony." That was the thing that really, really struck in my mind. But this was in Abu Dhabi. Have you ever come across? You must have seen at some stage. You know that Emirates Palace Hotel there.
Oh yes,
extraordinary place. It's like something. It's like something. One of these palaces that maybe Ceausescu would have built. You know, the design principle behind it was, you know, if in doubt, throw on some gold leaf, and if still in doubt, throw on even more gold leaf. And they didn't. They never looked like they were going to run out of gold, because, you know, that's the place, the hotel where they have the gold dispensing ATM in the lobby.
Oh, yes.
So it's, as I say, it's the most photographed, least used ATM I've ever seen. So what happens is you need an armor-plated credit card, and you check, there's a big screen that tells you the price of gold in dollars and yen and all the rest of it, you see, and you choose the size of ingot that you want to buy. So, you know, if you're feeling flush, you might go for the 10 gram rather than the 50, rather than the 5 gram. In goes the credit card, it explodes, and out comes your little gold bar. And it's the most extraordinary place. I mean, they put up a Christmas tree with like $10 million worth of jewellery on it and the rest of it. And as well as that, the auditorium there, I think it's something like, you know, 1,200 seat or something like that. It's sort of lost in the corner of a hotel. It's hidden away. It's so much so, I'm not exaggerating when I say, I came out of there one night. I was looking to go to a particular room and ended up one floor
above or below where I was meant to be. And I had no idea. I was going around in circles. I came across a member of staff. And of course, he was saying, well, where is it you want to go? And I wasn't entirely sure where I wanted to go. And I wasn't entirely sure like where how I'd got to where I was. Anyway, I got back home eventually. But that was a fantastic performance and a unique insight as well to see how the whole thing was put together. And perhaps that's what won me over to this as the piece I would nominate, you know, for the people who don't get it, this is the one to go for. Yeah, I suppose when he said, you know, play it like Haydn, he was really saying to people, you know, cast yourselves back. It's although it's a 20th century piece, cast yourselves back to the period in, that it's trying to echo. And as I always say, it's of my interpretation of it was that it's what I call the pre-Beethoven sound. He was the man who added, you know, luster and weight and depth. He expanded the orchestra even in numbers and also in whole scope. If you go back prior to that. A word I like to use is texture. The texture of the music is lighter. We often talk about it, you know, in the whole wine thing, Tomasov. You know, if a wine is unoaked, for instance, or is lower in alcohol, it's lighter on the palate. It's more lacy and delicate rather than a heavy, rich sort of texture. And I think you get the same thing in the sound. That reminds me, Tomasov. Were you ever in that place, in Eisenstadt, the Esterházy Palace?
Esterházy, yes. Austrian wine tasting.
Austrian wine tasting, yes. In Burgenland.
Ah, yes.
I don't think we ever visited together, but I remember going, yeah. And one of the guys I just got chatting on the bus was an American guy, and he says, you know, this palace we're going to, there's a great hall there, the Haydn's Hall. And he says, I'm determined to look at it. So I'll follow you. Anyway, we come up to the top of the stairs and we were obviously meant to turn left into these great series of rooms. Impressive in all in their own right, but he said it's down there. And I think it was sort of behind those red ropes and the rest of it and the door at the end. The pair of us darted down there when no one was looking into this magnificent hall with a big painted ceiling. Not that big. Again, it's, you know, the sort of classical era, even like the music. But it's very well regarded. Even today, it's still used. And of course, the Esterházy family were enormously wealthy and Haydn was maybe the last of the great composers who almost his whole career was spent in that, he was the composer to their court, in charge of the orchestra, in charge of writing music the whole time. And of course, we've touched on this before, Tomás, where I used the term like an indentured servant. But of course, maybe the flip side of that coin was that it gave somebody like this extraordinary security. And a constant need to turn stuff out. And I mean, he how many symphonies did he write? About 100 symphonies or something like that. I'm not sure.
232 hours, I think, isn't it? A good long amount of hours. I come back and say, I'm beginning to think these days that, you know, Western capitalism has been pushing us towards this idea, the Listian idea of the artist on his own, outside of the purview and the control of somebody who is showering them with money on a weekly basis, keeping them safe, feeding them, keeping them up in very large and beautiful palaces like the Esterházy Palace, which I stood at the outside and thought, this is rather swanky. Do you know, this is the kind of slavery, you know, where they say, here, all I want you to do is think about something you love, say writing music, just write music for me on a weekly basis and perform it. Could you do that without any worry at all about mortgages, tax, bills, social security, health? None of this. Just concentrate on that. We'll take care of everything else. That was definitely the kind of burden that artists needed to get rid of, I'm thinking.
Ladies and gentlemen, all doors will close in 5 minutes. We request that you take your seats in the auditorium. All doors will close in 5 minutes.
Beethoven is the oak, is he? He's the barrel-aged element to a nice Chardonnay. I think I could go with that. I think it does. It gives it a basso profundo. It adds a little something to the underbelly of a nice Chardonnay. And I think that what you've got here, you see, is both Prokofiev with his Haydn-esque Mozart linear, symphonic quality. You've got that's very unoaked, very unoaked. And while it's attractive to me, and there's a place for, you know, Chablis, a nice clean, clean, lean feel for this, I'm much more concerned about the second half here, where I feel what we're looking at is a potential for luscious and much more moody new world 20th century music. Here's music that's not been oaked. This is music that's been heavily extracted and has been profoundly weighted by, you know, really fine new techniques, better machinery, better farming techniques. Everything has been improved. The trumpet playing that we see in Panel, the trumpet playing that we see in Ravel, is the same trumpet playing, obviously, and even here, you know, the same player before and after. But now watch as you see Ravel, watch as you see Planel, and you'll see that the trumpet emerge from being a background instrument, a technical instrument for the production of individually beautiful filigree thin notes, into being something that's a profound method of evoking the soul, and, you know, in a way that Miles Davis, in a way that you know, even people like Dizzy Gillespie on trombone, you know, managed to do. But again, there are people who always ate back towards the other. You know, Herb Albert, you know, is someone that could. He's a Haydn man. You know, Louis Armstrong, he's a Haydn man. Miles Davis, he's Ravel. And we underweight Ravel because of Bolero. We're all well aware of it, having just come through the Winter Olympics. But it's in fact, it's a profoundly emotional and beautifully tone, high tone quality, you know, material that I think you can't really find in any other instrument. It's the saxophone and the trumpet. I think they're the instruments of the 20th century.
But Tomás, with regard to the Ravel, I'm unconvinced by this piece for orchestra, because, as you know, he wrote it for piano. And I can't have any time that I've heard it or seen it for orchestra. I just feel, Tomás, that it's slightly stretched. Written for piano, I think it's excellent, but it's a bit like maybe a house that's been overextended when it's scaled up onto the orchestral stage.
I disagree, and I think you have to look at who transcribed it. And you have to think about if it's somebody close to the composer or if it's the composer themselves, then you have to reconsider your views on transcription. And it's very much like somebody coming back with a different version of a play, deciding to set it in the 18th century or the 3rd century or the 19th century. And I don't think it's an error, and it's not wrong, and it doesn't destroy the work. It just opens up a different angle. For different people to come into, and, you know, as you reorchestrate it, you find people who prefer this, that, or the other, you know, sort of chromatic, you know, sort of entree that tickles their fancy, and they can access it in a more interesting way. And I think we can here, and I think I'm looking forward to it.
And Tomás, I see this is a surprise piece here this evening, and I'm expecting you now to spill the beans, because I see you have hidden over there behind the chair your trumpet. Are you going to be heading up on stage later?
Well, I thought, you know, I'd better bring it along just in case. Just in case there was a little arm come on now, a little arm twisting and off I romp. But I think I'll be overwhelmed after the Planel. I'm really looking forward to that. There's, you know, there's an opportunity for trumpet playing par excellence on that, but in a very modernist style. A very lonely will of the, you know, really looking forward to that. But if somebody needs a really, really poor version of anything we've heard tonight, or perhaps of King Wenceslas, or anything that a brass band might badly play in 1970s Yorkshire, I'm your man, and that could really be a surprise for this audience tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the final call. All doors are now closing, and we request that you take your seats in the auditorium immediately. Final call, ladies and gentlemen, all doors are now closing. Thank you.